My next guest says this: police work is the most toxic job on the planet. And if the members of the law enforcement community don't take measures to protect themselves, this job will eat them up. Next on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in, spending a little bit of your valuable time with me. If you're a new listener, welcome to the CJ Evolution podcast. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you for what you do. You do a fantastic job, and keep up the fantastic work. Folks, we continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. If you head over to iTunes, rate and review the show, give us that 5-star rating. We sure would appreciate it. It's an honor and privilege to be partnered with Detectachem. This great company is protecting our brave men and women in uniform in the military, first responders. This threat detection can fit in the palm of your hand. It truly is amazing. Detecting drugs and explosives. Check out the link at cjevolution.com and see what this great company can do for your organization. Honor and privilege to have my next guest on the show, John Marks. He is the executive director of the Law Enforcement Survival Institute, LESI, and the editor of copsalive.com. John is a former police officer with many years of experience. He's a speaker and a trainer. Now, put simply, the mission of both LESI and CopsAlive.com is to save the lives of the people who save lives. Really let that set in. And if you're struggling personally, or if you know somebody that's struggling that you're working with, or even if you don't work with somebody who's struggling, please use this information, give that to them, reach out to, there's plenty of resources out there. We have got to start taking better care of ourselves. Take some notes. This is a powerful episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I am very excited to have John Marks on the line. Johnny there, sir.
I am.
Well, I thank you for being here. I know you're very, very busy, man. Thank you for your service. You 23 years, right, in law enforcement.
That's correct.
Now, you retired, and I read your bio. It's amazing. Can you talk about some of the highlights you had in law enforcement?
Wow. I loved my career.
Yeah.
I started at a sheriff's office in Colorado. I started while I was still in college as a reserve deputy. And I love that experience. We had an opportunity to work everything that we could work. We worked patrol. We worked the jail. We worked animal control. We worked dispatch. And particularly in Colorado, I had the benefit of working both in the mountains and on the plains. Mm-hmm. And that is two completely different kinds of policing.
Oh, yeah.
But then, I went to work for a municipal police department, the city of Westminster, which is a suburb of Denver. Mm-hmm. I served there for another 21 years. And in my career, I worked the streets. I worked an awful lot of non-patrol work. I was the public information officer for a long time. I did crime prevention. I did all the media liaison work. And during that time, I was also on our SWAT team as a hostage negotiator, and that lasted about 19 years, most of which I spent as the hostage negotiation team leader. Mm-hmm. So I had a blessed career. Late in my career, I served as the community policing administrator for our agency, and also I worked as a detective in the burglary bureau.
Yeah, and it's amazing. And you were the security team supervisor at the 1996 Olympics in Georgia. And then you also have done like some pretty high profile security gigs for the Beach Boys, Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer. Yeah. The list goes on. I mean, how did you get those things?
Well, you've done your homework. Good for you.
Connections and networking, probably.
Yeah, actually, that's absolutely it. I was always one to want to do a little bit more. And yeah. I had some great connections, you know, working as the public information officer and, you know, representing our department, I got into a lot of things that led me to a lot of wonderful opportunities. The Olympic Games was truly special. And I don't know that I would have gotten that if it hadn't been for my media liaison work and also my work on the SWAT team as a negotiator. So, I went and found those opportunities and yeah. they, They were a blast.
Yeah, and they just don't fall in your lap. You got to seek them out, and that's through networking things like that.
Pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah. So I always ask all the Leos that come on my show, thank you for your service again, if I didn't mention that, but why did you want to become a police officer? I always find it fascinating. I mean, I know the general response, but what's your response to that?
Well, I think I actually love the general response. I truly wanted to help people. Okay. I wanted to make a difference. And okay. I know a lot of people in our profession laugh at that. And when somebody says it on an oral board,
I've been on both sides
of those oral boards.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is what we want our people to say, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I remember a couple of things. When I was in elementary school, the Denver Police Department brought a canine unit to our school and did a demonstration. And I remember thinking, ooh, ah, that's cool.
Yeah.
And later on, I'm old enough to remember a television program called Police Story that every episode they focused in on a specific part of the career. And I saw one episode about hostage negotiations and I'm like, oh man, I want to be that.
Yeah.
So those planted some seeds in my mind, but honestly, all the way through college, I was working on becoming a marine biologist.
Oh, and a little different.
a little bit different career path. I truly fell into law enforcement because I was working in the dormitories at night to sort of pay my way through school, and all the cops would come in for coffee, and they became friends, and they had me come out for ride-alongs, and I thought university law enforcement was really cool. I still do, actually.
Yeah.
And then I started riding with the city police and the county sheriff, and ultimately I became a reserve deputy. And one thing led to another, and I fell into law enforcement.
Yeah, it's the greatest show on earth.
It really is.
You know, I mean, I remember the one thing I loved about being on the street was, I mean, it's like, you know, I have family that have corporate jobs, and every day, according to them, it's the same thing. You never knew, obviously, preaching to the choir, you never knew what you were going to get into.
Right. Yeah, and I had a lot of different assignments, so I always was getting myself into something. But, you know, you've given a good segue here to my passion, mm-hmm. which is law enforcement wellness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we say things like greatest show on earth and live in the dream, and many of us, and I was one of them, say those things kind of sarcastically, because the job really does take its toll on us, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to change that. So thanks for the segue.
Well, and thank you for what you're doing, and I want to talk about, you know, the Law Enforcement Survival Institute and Cops Alive, but really, I want to talk a little bit about, we talked about this for a couple minutes off the air, John, but, you know, I'm like you, probably not as passionate as you, but I believe in officer wellness. And why aren't we teaching our officers about this and ingraining them that they need to take care of themselves? And more importantly, wherever they land in whatever agency, the agency views this as a priority.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't pay every agency because I think some agencies do better jobs than others.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, it just appalls me, to be honest. I mean, our society has such high expectations for all of us, and I think we have the same expectations for ourselves. We want to be heroes. You know, law enforcement has a hard, actually all emergency responders have a hard time with that term, even the military. You know, everybody strives to be a hero, but nobody wants to claim being a hero. Mm-hmm. But there are no programs to train us to be heroes, and yet the public has these huge expectations that we can shoot the gun out of their hand, or we'll be able to wrestle somebody with our karate moves, or, you know, and they just don't understand what happens on the streets in real life. And, and it appalls me to have those kinds of societal expectations that transfer into our, you know, our organizational expectations. And yet we have nothing to sustain our people. And this career is downright toxic. It will eat you up. Yeah. And obviously, I think we need to change that.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, John, as well as hopefully the listeners know, or at least many of them, people aren't knocking down the doors to become cops anymore like you and I probably was. Well, I know it was for me. I can't speak for you. But I remember applying for cop jobs 20-something years ago, and you'd have hundreds of applicants. From my perspective, and you can look at the attrition rates in law enforcement, people are getting out, a lot of officers are getting out of the profession, and people aren't knocking down the door anymore like they used to.
Yeah. Yeah, it has always been a tough profession. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably tougher. You know, I always wonder, would I go back in if I was 20 years younger? I think the answer is still yes. But boy, has it changed since I started. And, you know, just the invention, if you will, of body-worn cameras and telephones, cell phone cameras, where everybody is watching every decision you make, everything that happens. I think that's a tremendous amount of pressure. The job comes with a lot of pressure to begin with, but now that every single decision is recorded for posterity, it is a challenge. And I think, once again, we simply have to be preparing our young people for the job. I've heard a lot of people slam the new millennial generation. I'm not sure I have that same opinion. Everything I've seen and heard is that this generation is prepared to take the torch. They are just very different than we are. But from my perspective, the good news is they are very open to taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So the wellness message, the building resilience message that I share, I think resonates with people. And, you know, they want somebody to guide them through this profession. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those of us that have been here, I think we have to do that. And those of us that have learned about the dangers, the toxicity of the profession need to step up.
Yeah. And I remember one of the things that I learned, you know, when I was still on the job was, especially like you said, John, with the younger generation, is they're not concerned too much. Money is important, but they don't live to work. They work to live. And I think that was a hard thing for some of my superiors to learn. And that goes in with the wellness portion that you're talking about. There has to be. I mean, I remember putting up, you know, overtime assignments, and people wouldn't sign up, and the, you know, my chief and people are like, well, why aren't people signing up? Well, because we're on 10 hours, and people aren't going to spend all their days. I mean, some will. It's just like you said, it's different when I went into law enforcement. We used to gobble that stuff up. Now. And I think it's good that the young people are saying, look, I want my time off. I need to reset.
Yeah. Yeah, I was an overtime hog. And, you know, I worked multiple jobs. We were allowed to moonlight at the local hospital doing security. Mm-hmm. In addition to all the movie theaters, grocery stores, you know, everything else, nightclubs that we would work at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I gobbled that stuff up, but I also look back on that and think, boy, was I an idiot, because I know I was fatigued. I know that I was not resetting, as you say. I was not dealing with the stress that I took from multiple jobs, and, you know, I wasn't processing. And I hope this younger generation is a lot smarter than we were, and they are aware of what goes on, and they're more apt, I think, to take care of themselves.
Well, but I think it starts, and I agree with that, but I think it starts with the culture of the organization. And it's more importantly, it starts with the leadership of the organization. If they are really big proponents of officer wellness and make that a priority, then it's going to filter down. You know that, John. If they're not putting that as a priority, then that's going to be the culture of the organization.
Right. Well, and if you don't mind, let me share some of what I believe
here. Go ahead.
You know, what I teach now, you know, I don't consider myself an expert. I am simply a guide. I am a little further down the path than people that are in the job now. And I hope they can learn from my mistakes and perhaps from some of the wisdom that I accumulated. And, you know, I would say the same to you. Just doing this program is so beneficial. Mm-hmm. It is passing on our wisdom to the people that need it that come after us. So good on you. But I actually, you know, the word of the day, I think, is resilience. And I think it's getting overused, but I still think it's a really good word. I like the concept of resilience. If we expect our young peacekeepers to maintain the highest standard throughout a, say, 30, 35-year career, whatever it's going to be, 25, they have to be able to sustain themselves. And I think that word is resilience. You know, I jokingly say I want people to get to Ali Ali oxen free and live happily ever after, but nobody gives you a manual for how that gets done.
Yeah.
So what I was going to share is I think that there are actually four realms of resilience And this is kind of where we were going. First of all, it's the individual realm. We have to build our own strength and condition our own wellness to sustain us throughout the career. And to me, that's not just physical fitness, but it's also mental, emotional, and spiritual fitness. And I differentiate between mental and emotional. I know we use the word mental health, but to me in the profession, mental fitness is cognitive fitness. Mm-hmm. It's about being self-aware. It's about being curious. It's about having good language skills, good problem-solving skills. It's about boosting your memory. It's about boosting your situational awareness, all those things that keep us alive, as opposed to emotional health, which is what we normally describe as mental health. But it's also about building courage and learning how to manage fear and things that we don't normally train. Mm-hmm. So I think you can build a resilient human being and a resilient cop or a firefighter or soldier. But I think if they're working in an organization that is unhealthy or doesn't support them, as you were just describing, I think that is a recipe for disaster. And so I think we have to build the support systems that surround our healthy individuals too. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, unfortunately, if that organization is working in a community that's unhealthy, I think it's also a struggle. And I don't mean to pick on poor Ferguson, Missouri, but I don't know what it's like to police there even today because there was so much hatred and animosity. So I hope they've rebuilt that. But I think it would be a struggle to be a cop in a community where the people hate you.
Yeah.
And so we hear stories out of the inner cities of Baltimore and Chicago and New York City. And I feel for the law enforcement officers there because it's a challenging job.
Yeah.
So it is kind of symbiotic. And then the last thing you mentioned already is our culture. And we don't exactly have a culture that promotes taking care of each other. Mm-hmm. We have a suck it up, buttercup, shake it off and get back in there kind of culture, which came from the military and works just fine in a theater where you go into combat and you come back out and you have a chance to heal. But our people are in the theater every day for 30 years, and that mentality just doesn't work. So we have to find a way to sustain ourselves. And part of that is having a culture that supports it. Because if we don't make it safe for people to ask for help, then they won't reach out when they need it. And the earlier people reach out, the more likely we are to be able to help them and sustain them so that they can maintain their profession, take care of their own family, and most of all, take care of our society.
Yeah. It's excellent. And I was writing notes when you were talking because you're exactly right. And when you were talking several minutes ago about a toxic environment, and I've said it many times, and of course, John, you know it. You know, it's a toxic environment. I mean, I'm talking about, people don't call us when things are great. People call us when, right, you know what, hits the fan. Now, it makes it that much worse when we have an internal toxic environment. It's like, okay, I can't get away from this stuff. Now, yep. Let me ask you a question, and I have a take on this, and I really do believe, and I started telling officers this toward the latter part of my career, is that you gotta have friends outside of law enforcement. I'm not taking a stab at law enforcement. I love law enforcement, the brave men and women out there serving. But I started getting friends outside of law enforcement probably about 10 years ago. And I know that changed my outlook a lot. And I was happier, believe it or not. I don't know what your experience is, but I really think that is so important. If you're sitting around telling war stories and cop stories all the time, and you're hanging around cops that everything sucks and they don't like their job, and I'm not saying you're not going to have bad days, that's going to take a toll on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can attest to that. I retired when I was fairly young because it was taking a toll on me.
Well, me too.
And I knew it, and I had the ability to get away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think it is not even just your friends. I think it's the entire social support network that you create. So I ask, when I teach, I ask people, you know, who's on your team? Because, and I don't think people really think about that, but we have a team of people supporting us. Hopefully you have a physician and a dentist and maybe an accountant and maybe a massage therapist and maybe a physical fitness or a trainer or coach. But you know, your team is a lot of people. It's your family, it's your friends. It's, the people that interact and support you, and that's where we really have to be looking, is the support mechanism. Yeah. And from an agency point of view, we have to be paying attention to that too, because that is our first line of defense. Cops are such great chameleons. You know, we can put on a proud face, but the people at home are going to see the cracks long before our supervisor is going to see them. And we have to be connected to that support network if we're going to sustain our people.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. I mean, I love the term chameleon, because you're exactly right. I was thinking back on my career, where so many times I would mask, my feelings. I'm lucky enough and blessed enough to have a good team, like you say, that really, really helped me through it. And, kind of my mindset changed. It's weird. The older I got, the more my mindset changed. I'm glad, that I was able to. I had a great career like you, but I'm glad that I'm, doing other things now, and I'm talking to great people like you, and providing people, like you said, with some wisdom that we've gained over the years.
Yeah. Well, and the reverse of that, by the way, I'll just take that a little further, is I ask my students, whose team are you on? Mm-hmm. Because we get so egocentric and, it's all about me. And we kind of forget that some of the strength we get comes from doing things for other people.
Exactly.
And particularly in our profession, what I find, we haven't gotten onto the topic of suicide, but I think that's going to come up here in a second. And mm-hmm. I think we need to bring it up.
Yeah.
But, it's never the person that's hearing the message that needs help. But we are pretty good about taking care of other people. And so sometimes if the message falls on deaf ears, maybe that same person will then take the message and share it with one of their peers, because we've got to start doing something about taking care of each other. And that means, whose team are you on? Who are you supporting? If we say things like, I've got your back, we're all one big family, I've got your six, then we have to put our money where our mouth is. And that means we actually have to have their back. Mm-hmm. And that means, sometimes it means doing the tough thing, which means intervening when somebody is really messing up and they need help, but they're not going to ask for it.
Yeah. And you, talking about suicide, John, I know you went through a personal experience. Can you share that?
I would be happy to, because it makes a difference. What led me to the path I'm on right now was the suicide of a friend of mine who worked at a local sheriff's office. He was a really good friend of a really good friend of mine. So we would vacation together, we would socialize together, and he was truly the life of the party. And the people, he retired as a patrol sergeant. He retired young at age 36. Everybody loved him. He went into the family business. When he said, I'm living the dream, he truly meant it, because the family business was thriving. When we went on vacation, the family business owned a home in Fort Myers, Florida, on the waterway. They had a 40-foot boat tied up to the dock outside the back door. Mm-hmm. They had a BMW convertible in the garage. And when we vacationed together with who I called Brother Bob, we were living the dream. But about a year and a half after the last time we went down to Florida together, he completed suicide, and it shocked everybody, because he was always a leader. He was always the life of the party, and no one, including myself, saw this coming, which, we all say that. But, we also believed, even though he didn't leave a note, that he was haunted, I think, like many of us are, by what I call the ghosts of the profession. And in his case, truly, he had responded in one case to a fatal automobile accident that killed three teenage girls. And he was fascinated by the fact that right after their death, one of those roadside memorials sprung up with the flowers and the teddy bears to mark the place where they were killed. I think of that as kind of the Princess Diana effect, yeah. But they are everywhere now. And Bob was a pretty empathetic person, and he was frustrated that all the cars driving by that memorial would not know the story of those three girls and what happened to them. And so he started on a program to document roadside memorials. He was going to travel around the country, he was going to photograph them, he was going to find the stories of the people that died, and he was going to put together like a coffee table book. And he had that as his big plan. And I don't know that that's necessarily what led to his taking his life, but you know, something was eating away at him. I think we take things from the job, and a lot of times it has to do with death and tragedy and destruction. And, you know, something ate away at him, and he took his own life. The bad thing was that he took his own life in his own patrol district. So even though he'd left the job, he lived in the in a neighborhood that was patrolled by his shift and his people. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones that had to find him. And that funeral was one of the most, devastating I ever attended, mm-hmm. because he ripped the hearts out of his people. And that ripple effect was horrible, and it lasted for a long time.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for that loss and his family's loss. And, you know, I mean, I think it goes back to, or what I'm getting from, what reminds me of is what you were talking about, a chameleon, you know, that he was able to mask that. You were so right, John, that we're able, most of us are able to suppress that, and you wouldn't know what was going on with this guy. And it truly is a shame that, you know, he was so conflicted internally that he felt the only option was taking his own life.
Yeah, and, you know, we're trained. It's part of our profession to, you know, have that stiff upper lip, to have that appearance of professionalism, even if we don't feel it. But I will take that one step further. There were two times in my 23-year career where I thought about taking my own life. And I thought about it to the point where I actually had a plan about where I was going to do it and how I was going to do it to cause the minimal amount of trauma to my peers. But, you know, I thank my parents, I thank a lot of things for me not doing that. I think I was raised well enough to be an optimist, and suicide is a very impulsive act. Mm-hmm. And I think I was always, you know, able to see the light of day. I negotiated with many, many people, including other cops, to talk them out of suicide. And somehow I was able to do that on my own. But when Bob took his life, and I had already been retired, I realized that all those things I was feeling were not just me, but that's what I thought. I thought, oh, that's just me. I'm just not tough enough. I need to get out of this career before it eats me up. But I've talked to thousands mm-hmm. of other cops around the world, and it's amazing to me how many people have thought about suicide, and it's appalling to me how many of our brothers and sisters behind the badge have completed suicide.
Yeah.
So I think it's a symptom. It's not the root cause here, but it's a symptom that we have been neglecting for a long time, and we have got to stop. We have got to change what's happening in our profession.
And I don't think, you know, talking about your problems, if you know, if there's listeners out there, really heed John's advice. If you're out there conflicted, and there's a pretty good chance that some of you are thinking about this, you know, I mean, you need to talk to somebody, because I'm sure most of you were brought up to believe that you can't talk about your, I'm talking about in the law enforcement profession, you can't express your emotions or talk about your feelings because it's a sign of weakness. Let me tell you something, it's a sign of strength, and that's what heals you, and that's what gets you on the path to wellness.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me put some resources that are absolutely free in your hands right this second. If you go to our main website, which is copsalive.com, copsalive, all one word, you type copsalive/suicide prevention, also all one word, there is an entire page there of information about preventing our suicides in our profession. And so on that page is an anonymous hotline that I prefer. There are a number of them around the country, but I refer people to Safe Call Now. Their phone number is 1-206-459-3020. So put that into your phone, and I'll repeat it again in a minute. But if you're thinking about something and you need help, call them now, because you'll get other first responders. If it's not a cop that answers, you can ask for one. Mm-hmm. But on that resource page, there is enough there to start your own suicide prevention program in your agency today. There's a link to a 12-minute video produced by the IACP and the American Association of Suicidology. On that resources page is everything you will need to start your own program right now. There's a video, a training video. There's discussion guides, there are hotlines, there are printed materials, everything you need. There's no excuses here. You can start your own program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's you, truly, if it's you that's thinking about taking your own life, then call Safe Call now. They're in the state of Washington, and what I love about them is they have worked very hard to enact some legislation in the state of Washington to protect your anonymity, no matter where you're calling from in the United States. And I think that probably holds for Canada as well. But their number, I'll give it to you again, put it in your phone, write it down, 1-206-459-3020. You can find them at safecallnow.org. Love what they're doing, started by first responders, started by cops, and fielded by first responders. They have a lot more volunteers now. If you're not getting the kind of person you want to talk to, ask for somebody else. They'll help you out. But they have resources all around North America to match a treatment center that can help you with your insurance coverage. They will get you the help you need. So, you know, if that's you, great. Get some help. Yeah. And if it's not you, have that number for one of your peers.
Yeah. Because there really is no excuse now nowadays with the resources we have available and technology. You know, there you can't say, well, there's nothing out there for me. You just can't do it anymore.
Right. Yeah. You know, there is just too much. And the fact that, yeah, I don't know whether people know, I don't know if you've talked about it on your show, for the first time in history that I know of, 2018, the number of law enforcement officer suicides exceeded the number of law enforcement line of duty deaths. That's appalling. You know, people can throw up all kinds of numbers and you can compare us to the general population and blah, blah, blah. But the issue is, I don't know of many jobs or careers that have the kind of rigorous selection process we have in law enforcement, where we are psychologically vetted to have the right kind of mentality for this job. And yet, despite all of that, we have a massive suicide problem. I think there's an issue we've got to take care of.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, can you talk a little bit about the Law Enforcement Survival Institute, John?
Sure, thank you. You know, I said it a little while ago, I am no expert. In fact, if you ever learn anything from me, you could probably learn from my mistakes and the things that I have done wrong. But one of the things that happened right after Brother Bob took his life is I realized where I was going to go. I've been a law enforcement trainer now for over 39 years. That tells you how old I am. But I at least have the capacity to help others learn and grow and understand. And if I can guide you on that path, I would be happy to. So I started writing at copsalive.com right after Bob's death, and I've invited all kinds of other experts and law enforcement professionals to contribute. We don't accept any advertising. It's about cops helping other cops. Mm-hmm. And believe me, you know, I got to be careful about terminology here, because I truly think that what happens to us happens to everybody in our profession. That includes dispatchers. It includes report takers. It includes animal control officers. It includes everybody, because we're all part of the organization that goes to help society when bad things happen, and it splashes over all of us. Mm-hmm. And I really have a special place in my heart for dispatchers and communication specialists, because they have so little control. They do such an amazing job, but they're remote. And oftentimes they don't even hear from us what happened after we were yelling for help and then everything worked itself out. And so, you know, take care of your dispatchers, please. But, you know, I started writing on Cops Alive, inviting other people to write. And then I started writing the book, which I eventually published about a year and a half ago, called Armor Yourself, How to Survive a Career in Law Enforcement. I've been doing that training for about 12 years. But it took me 8 years to write the book. And it just pulls together all of my beliefs about how do we take care of ourselves? How do we build resilient individuals that can get to Ollie Ollie Oxen Free and live happily ever after? Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy process. I mean, the book is 458 pages all by itself. It's like a textbook, and that's not what I had intended. You and I had talked about Kevin Gilmartin. I wanted just to write a companion book for his book, but it just got out of control because there's a lot to say. So I think people need to recognize that this is a lifelong commitment to taking care of yourself so that you can take care of other people. One of the things that I say in my training is, you know, if we don't take care of our people, they're not going to be able to take care of the people. And so I recognized pretty early on that I wasn't the expert. And so what I did is start assembling the experts. And if you look at our other website at lawenforcementsurvivalinstitute.org and you look at the list of faculty members, which is constantly growing, and I still have a lot to put up there, but I found some people. I mean, most notable at the top, I found a psychologist, Eric Potterat. At the time, I went Googling, you know, building mental toughness. How do we build mental toughness? And he is the guy. At that point in his career, he was the force psychologist for the U.S. Navy SEALs. And that meant that he was the supervising psychologist for the 13 other psychologists that just supported the SEAL teams. And you know, there are plenty of similar groups around the world, but arguably the SEALs encounter some of the toughest stuff and go on some of the toughest missions, and they've got a whole support system taking care of them, and he was the guy that developed a lot of that. So he became one of the contributors, one of the support members, one of the people that mentored me on how to do this stuff. The other one right there is Chaplain Kerry Friedman. He's the one that that helped the FBI National Academy create their program on spiritual survival for law enforcement. In fact, he helped them create a program called Tools for Intentional Spirituality. He's the guy. He wrote the book, Spiritual Survival for Law Enforcement. He wrote another book called Wisdom from the Bat Cave. Pretty much similar stuff with a different approach. For those of you that love superheroes and love the Batman, that book is outstanding. But it's the same stuff. And honestly, I never felt comfortable talking about the spiritual component of our profession, the why that keeps us going. And yet he does the best job I've ever seen of any trainer, any chaplain, to do that. And it's a tough thing to talk about. But if you just take the religious piece out for a minute, I mean, some people have a strong religious faith, and that's great. Some do not. And we all have to recognize that when we're talking about that component of the human being, it has to do with honor and integrity. It has to do with ethics and principles and moral values. Some of you get those from your religion. Others need to train themselves. So we love to talk about being warriors, but, you know, if you look back in history, the true warrior was one that was invested in a very strong code of ethics, that was invested in integrity and a code of honor. And I think that's something we need to build into our profession. I think it's there. We've gotten a lot from the military, but I think sometimes we don't want to be militaristic, so we shun some of the strong traditions that keep us going, and a code of honor is one of those things. So anyway, to answer your question, now that I went on and on.
No.
The Law Enforcement Survival Institute is a collection of experts that are there to help not only individuals, but agencies, you know, find their way to strength and resilience, to truly be the kind of people we want to be, the kind of people we need to be, the kind of organizations we want to have, the kind of organizations our community needs us to have. We've focused specifically on this issue of wellness because we think it's at the core of everything. And that's who we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. And the thing is, John, and most administrators, most chiefs, sheriffs, they know this. They're smart people, but yet they don't take the steps forward to implement it.
Yeah, and I don't know how to explain that. I just think, you know, we get all fuzzy when it comes to science. I am fascinated by this new drive for evidence-based policing, and I completely ascribe to that, and I absolutely believe in it. But one of the things that I think about our profession is we get so differential. If somebody has a PhD after their name, you know, we just assume that they walk on water and they know everything. And I have found that's not always the case.
Nope.
And I have found that there are plenty of people that have gotten PhDs in things other than psychology. And we assume they're all psychologists and they are not. And, you know, we get fuzzy about the human condition and human behavior. But my challenge is just because it's very hard to define and just because it's something we don't completely understand, I don't think we have the luxury of turning our back on things that work, things that could work. We need to start strengthening our people so they can endure what this career is going to throw at them. And we need to strengthen our organizations to endure what our society is throwing at law enforcement right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have battles on a lot of different fronts, mm-hmm. and there are just not enough of us, you know, really preaching the wellness path. And I think it all starts with the individual human being.
I agree. And if you're out there, if the listeners are out there, and if some of you might be thinking, well, I have a toxic environment internally, my command staff, or I don't get support, this and that, you can do a couple different things. You can go find another job in a different organization, yep. or you can take steps to, you might be in a toxic environment. It doesn't mean you have to subscribe to that. It's kind of like, I say this all the time, John, and you probably heard this, the same thing. It's, you know, you get on a plane and what do? They go through a safety presentation, right? And what's the first thing they say? If the oxygen masks drop, who do you put it on first? Yourself. Because yep. if you're not taking care of yourself first, how can you take care of everybody else? How can you be the best officer you can be? How can you be the best husband or spouse or dad or cousin or son or daughter? It doesn't work.
Yep. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. If you don't like the environment, move, because this is a particularly a generation where there is no penalty for moving from job to job.
No.
And, you know, as long as you're not in the, you know, the thick of it, then you're going to get a good positive recommendation. Go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Be safe. Take care of yourself. But the other thing that I believe in, I truly believe in individual leadership. And that is what this career is built upon. We are all individual leaders. We are expected to be the first car on scene to solve the problems, to take care of things. And we rise to that occasion 24/7, 365. And yet when it comes to taking care of ourselves, or taking care of a problem around us, we are a bunch of cowards. Mm. And I will say that out loud because one of the things I talk about is what I call true blue valor. You have to have the courage to do what's right, even when it hurts. Mm. And sometimes we shun away from that, and we've got to stop it.
Yeah. And I tell listeners, and I talk to cops all the time, you know, and they say, well, the public, most of them say, well, you know, the media is always coming down on us. The public doesn't support us. And I say, that's BS. The majority of people out there support law enforcement. Now, the flip side of that, John, in my opinion, is they need to be more vocal than they are. Because I think the majority of people out there, you can't tell me the majority of people out there don't support law enforcement. They do, the vast majority. It's that small minutia, that small segment of people that hate the cops that get all the airtime.
Yep. Oh, we are in complete agreement. And, you know, that's the challenge to society. They need to step up. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back to law enforcement, the people that I can impact, we need to step up.
Yeah.
We need to build those relationships. I was a community policing administrator. I believe in getting out and shaking hands and meeting people and going to their barbecues and going to their meetings and being officer friendly and doing all the things that build those bonds before we need them. And the same holds true with the media. I worked with the media for years. I spent a lot of time building strong relationships with them, and it paid off.
Yeah.
But you build those, you know, relationships before you need them.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't agree more. Well, John Marks, sir, it's an honor having you on the show. How can people find you? How can people find your book, Arm Yourself? Armor Yourself,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Thanks. We have a lot of ways to find us. Our main website is copsalive.com. Come visit. Please write something. Communicate with us. We're on all the different social media platforms, Facebook, LinkedIn. We're thinking about Instagram. I just don't know what to do with Instagram. Facebook, Twitter, the other one is Twitter. You can find out about our training programs and the people that are involved in guiding others at lawenforcementsurvivalinstitute.org. Sorry about that. Go to Cops Alive. There'll be a link there. Obviously, I would love to have you buy my book. It's called Armor Yourself. We have armoryourself.com. You can buy it from us directly, or it's available on Amazon. If you're a Prime member, you can get it in 2 days with no shipping. So please reach out. Please communicate. Please share your ideas. Please listen to this program. You know, be involved. Be a leader.
Mm-hmm. John Marks, an honor, sir. Much success to you and all your endeavors in the future. If you ever need anything, hey, I'm right down the block from you, sir. We got to get together and have some coffee. So again, much success, sir. And it was a pleasure having you on.
My pleasure as well. Thank you, and stay safe.
All right, John.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.